Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earl, joined by Alex Lord. A lot to talk about today on the Falcons head coaching search. Rob Gronkowski talks about Bill Belichick and having full control of the team. Adam Schefter has a new take on Belichick that he might not be the favorite. That's what we're going to start off with today. We're going to break down the NFC and AFC championship rounds and talk about Jim Harbaugh inking a deal with the Los Angeles Chargers. But as I said, we are starting off with Adam Schefter, and he was on Get Up this morning on ESPN, and he said that he doesn't necessarily believe that Bill Belichick is the favorite to land the Atlanta Falcons head coaching job, and his reasoning was rather simple and makes a lot of sense on the surface. It's that Belichick interviewed twice very early on. They've satisfied the Rooney Rule. If they were really dead set on Bill Belichick, why wouldn't they just hire him? Why would they keep expanding the search? Why would they keep second interviewing with guys, stuff like that? So it makes sense on the surface. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, that's what it is. It feels very surface level. It feels like, you know, I'm big tinfoil hat guy with this whole Falcon search, that Blank is doing it to appease the public and Rich McKay. You know, something along the lines of a conversation of, hey, Arthur, you know, just hear everybody out, go through the entire process. And if you still want Blank or Belichick, I'm sorry, then we'll hire Belichick. But I firmly believe that Blank's mind is still on Belichick. It was from the start. We've talked about it ad nauseum that I don't think any of these candidates have as much sway other than Jim Harbaugh, who we're going to talk about later in the show, is currently off the board. So I do think that it's Belichick or bust for Blank, unless a candidate comes in and completely blows him away. I think this is all surface level to appease the media, appease the public, Falcons fans, and honestly appease the internal Falcons organization, mainly Rich McKay. I truly believe that. Big tinfoil hat stuff, but like when we end up on Belichick, I think I'm going to be proven right.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll both be proven right because I haven't strayed away from the path, and I'm not going to do it yet. I'm not going to do it quite yet because Adam Schefter, very well respected, probably the biggest insider in the entire sport outside of maybe Ian Rappaport, but it's him and Ian Rappaport. They are the biggest and the best. But this is not a report. This is a straight up just a feeling based on, hey, we haven't interviewed him in a week. Maybe this is losing momentum, which is basically what everyone else has been saying. And to me, whether it was Kendall or Rothstein or Adam Schefter saying this, I don't know if there's actually momentum loss until someone comes out and says, hey, the Falcons really aren't considering Bill Belichick. They had a bad second interview. They want to keep Rich McKay. All of this stuff is legitimate. Because to me, it all still comes down to the same question that it's come down the entire time. Will Arthur Blank move on from his good friend and his weasel buddy, Rich McKay, in favor of Bill Belichick? And if he's willing to do that, and if Bill Belichick is this guy and he's willing to move off of him, he's going to be the next head coach in Atlanta. I still believe that to this day, and I don't think it's going to change based on what, unless we hear straight from the horse's mouth, someone has a report that says Bill Belichick pissed off the Falcons brass and they do not want him, I still think he's the favorite. Now, is there more of an opening than there was at the beginning? I don't know. I really don't know. Because the truth is, nothing has really come out since that second interview. We don't know how it went. We don't know if it went well. We don't know what was discussed. I imagine it had a lot to do with Rich McKay and the power dynamic in that thing. But until something comes out on that end, I'm sticking to my guns here and still saying Bill Belichick is the favorite.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, to your point, Rich McKay, or against your point, Rich McKay is a very experienced guy in the NFL. He's been in the NFL for like three decades, multiple roles, GM, CEO. He's the chair on the competition committee. He knows a lot. He's got a lot of strings in the league that he can pull. Like, you know, Jeff Schultz tweeted out the other day, he helped Arthur Blank get that new stadium. But you know who's got more cachet in this league than just about anybody in maybe the league's history is Bill Belichick. Many consider him the GOAT, and Arthur Blank is infatuated with the Patriot way. I mean, it's the greatest sports dynasty in sports. And Arthur Blank is still, you know, begging for just one ring. I think that if there is one guy that he would, you know, put personal feelings aside for his good buddy, Rich McKay, it would be for Bill Belichick. And I think that, you know, you can have two things at once. You can have your cake and eat it as well. And Rich McKay can stay on as a CEO and operate the business side of things, as well as all the other A and B entities and everything like that. And Blank and him can still have that cozy relationship. And Belichick can come in and, you know, take control over football hops and work hand in hand with Terry Fontenot without that structure that everybody apparently hates, according to Schultz, of reporting to a CEO and Rich McKay. The fact of the matter is that I am not going to be swayed by, you know, Atlanta beat writers or Schefter's feelings that just because Belichick hasn't been hired, that he still isn't the front runner. I still believe that. I think that Blank thinks so highly of McKay that he is basically not doing him a favor, but, you know, going through the entire search thoroughly within the back of his mind. He's like, unless somebody blows through the way, I'm going with Belichick. As I've wanted this whole process. The only reason I fired Arthur Smith is because I thought I could get Bill Belichick. That's what I think.
Yeah. I mean, we'll know a lot after today. Bobby Slowick comes in for his second interview. He's a guy that's supposedly really impressed. But all these guys that are getting second interviews supposedly really impressed the Atlanta Falcons. As I said, it's not like anyone's, you know, right on Bill Belichick's heels. And whether that's because of Belichick and nobody wanting him or because Belichick is like, in his mind, it's Falcons or bust. Like, I don't want to go be the Panthers head coach. I don't want to be something like that. That remains to be seen. So we'll know a lot after today with the whole Bobby Slowick thing, but I'm right there with you. You know, I'm not going to be swayed by the feelings. I'm not going to be swayed by the optics until something comes out that's tangible and tells me that Bill Belichick is not the guy. I'm still going to believe he's right in the middle of the running. So we're going to have to find out. Sticking on the topic of Bill Belichick, coming up after the break, Rob Gronkowski has some interesting words about the potential fit. When it comes to Bill Belichick and the Atlanta Falcons, everybody has an opinion, and his former player, Hall of Famer, future Hall of Fame tight end, Rob Gronkowski, is no different. He was on Up and Adams with Kate. It's Kate Adams, right? I believe. Anyway, Kay Adams. He was on Up and Adams, and he was talking about Bill Belichick and how he fits. And he did mention the possibility that maybe Bill Belichick takes a year off. Maybe he doesn't get the opportunity he likes, takes a year off, re-enters the hiring pool. He talked about how he did that, and all of a sudden you're focused and ready to go. But he did say he thinks the Atlanta Falcons not only should hire Bill Belichick, that they should give him 100% control of the team. He's been there. He's done it. He's done it in New England. He's done it well. And he's all bought on. And I thought it was interesting coming from a former player, a guy in Gronkowski. You know, there's been kind of murmurs and things that have been said about how playing for Bill Belichick isn't fun and stuff like that. Regardless, the guy still holds him in high regard when it comes to building a team, building a staff, coaching and winning. He said he could get the Falcons turned around and back to the playoffs overnight.
Yeah, he operated essentially with full autonomy in New England for more than two decades. He pretty much is the architect of the greatest sports dynasty we've ever seen with the help of the greatest quarterback of all time. But a lot of people, you know, Tom Brady himself credits Bill Belichick with his development. And I think you'd be a fool not to. The fact of the matter is, and, you know, the past 5 years or so, the guy has had a terrible track record in terms of front office decision making. I'm blanking on his name, but the last first round pick they gave a second contract to was like a decade ago. That is a terrible track record. You don't have to look very far in his past draft picks, even in his free agent picks, other than like Matthew Judon, to show that he isn't capable of doing it anymore, or at least he needs, you know, somebody to at least bounce ideas off of. And I know that Gronkowski is going to hold Bill Belichick in high regard, but the fact of the matter is Gronkowski was a little ant in New England. He didn't see things from a bird's eye view. He had no idea what was going on other than what was going on the field. He admitted at times he never watched film. He just looked at Brady and asked Brady what to do. So I wouldn't, you know, put too much weight into what Gronkowski says. Robert Kraft told Bill Belichick not to trade Tom Brady and to trade Jimmy Garoppolo, and he went on to go win a couple more Super Bowls with Brady. So that just shows you that Belichick isn't infallible. You know, he does make mistakes. He has made mistakes. He was stopped from making a mistake. Hell, he probably should have given Brady another couple years in New England. He went to Tampa Bay. The roster wasn't as good as Tampa Bay's, but Tom Brady went and he could still play and got Tampa Bay a Super Bowl. I don't think this is a hot take at all. I think most Falcons fans who are either for or against Bill Belichick are against him run with personnel decision-making power.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any problem with him being involved, especially when it comes to the defensive side of the ball and the defensive personnel and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I think most people agree that Terry Fontenot has done a good job, especially on the pro personnel side of things. I think it really comes down to getting McKay out there. I mean, you know, he said when he left New England that he doesn't need 100% control. I believe that, and I don't think he's getting that anywhere. I don't think if he waits a year, he's going to get that. I don't think there's a situation out there. I really think it just comes down to McKay. I think Terry Fontenot would still be involved. I don't know who gets to pull the last trigger and everything, but I think maybe Arthur Blanken's involved. I don't love the whole dynamic regardless, but I do think that, you know, he's not going to come in here and get 100% control. I think he is a brilliant defensive mind. I think he knows the personnel he needs to succeed on that side of the ball. And I think the other decision should be left up to everyone else. Defensively, I would be willing to be like, all right, you can have the final say because you know the pieces. You've done this for 20 plus years and you've done it a damn good job of it. Even when the Patriots are bad, they've always had a great defense. Everything else, I think you do need to have that back and forth with a guy like Terry Fontenot. And if he does come in, I expect that to be the case. I would be shocked if it wasn't the case. But yeah, as we said, I think it comes down to Rich McKay more than Terry Fontenot. I think he would be willing and maybe even open to the idea of having a guy that he respects, who's proven a little something in this league like Terry Fontenot, to help him out with these decisions.
A couple of thoughts on what you just said. I think, you know, a standard working relationship between a head coach and a GM is going to involve collaboration. The coach saying, this is my idea for us. This is kind of the player I need. Please go find him or bring me some options. And then the GM goes, these are the guys we think, you know, this is what's going to be available. So there's always going to be some level of collaboration. And I think that would continue with Belichick. I think, and this is coming from like Jeremy Fowler and Dan Graziano of ESPN, that basically Belichick is going to bring with him an entourage. And that entourage isn't just coaching staff. That's an entourage of people in the front office. So, you know, Rich McKay's role is going to dwindle. Even though Fontenot may be kept, he's going to have to collaborate with more people who aren't necessarily of his choosing in the front office. So I think there are many layers to all of this. And I think that even logistically, it is a bit weird to kind of force two families together. It feels like unnatural to a certain extent. And I think there should be hesitation from Terry Fontenot and Rich McKay. Arthur Blank just has this fascination with the Patriot way and Robert Kraft and, you know, all the Super Bowl rings. And how could you not? I mean, the success is unmatched. But the fact of the matter is it's going to be a wonky fit because Bill Belichick isn't showing up with just one bag. He's showing up with an entourage of guys behind him, coaches, personnel guys, you know, the training staff. He's going to bring a lot of those guys with him. So I think, you know, that is something to consider. And it's what Graziano and Fowler basically said, you know, it's holding it up.
Let me ask you this, though. Aside from all of the stuff you just mentioned, the front office stuff, the guy that he brings in, just coach for coach, now that Jim Harbaugh is off the table, just from a coaching perspective, if he's not as 100% all in the power, and let's say it's 50% or something like that, how many guys would you really take to have success over the next couple of years other than Bill Belichick, if he's willing to relinquish some of that control that you've heard of? Because I just am not super in love with any of the candidates, to be honest, at this point.
Well, everybody outside of Vrabel and Harbaugh have absolutely no head coaching experience or very little head coaching experience. Raheem Morris had a couple of theirs. Couple of years there with Tampa Bay. He was an interim here. Steve Wilks had a year in Arizona. He was an interim as well in Carolina. So in terms of experience, like a proven track record, now it's really just Vrabel and Belichick. The rest of them are kind of just like gambles, and it could work out and it couldn't. So if you're asking me for the surest bet, yeah, it's probably Belichick. And to be quite frank, it feels like that's all Blank really cares about. He doesn't, you know, he's not he doesn't want to hit the home run. He doesn't care about hitting the home run of the Bobby Slowicks, the Ben Johnsons, the next great Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay. He's like, I just want, you know, some level of consistency. I need to know that we're going to be successful. And if that's what you're looking for, you'd be hard pressed to find a more surefire way to, you know, get a above 500 season than Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I mean, if Bill comes in, the Falcons, I would put good money on the Falcons making.
There's no coach. There's no coach in the division that's better. And if they get Kirk Cousins, Kirk Cousins will be the best quarterback. When you have the best coach and the best quarterback, you're probably going to win the division. Hell, if they get Baker Mayfield, and Bill Belichick, I would still argue they'd have the best quarterback head coach combination.
And probably the best roster. I mean, the Panthers, maybe the Bucs have a little bit better roster.
Yeah, the Bucs is comparable.
The Saints are aging and keep getting worse, and they can't really make a lot of additions. I mean, listen, I see the attractions of both sides. Ben Johnson would be my number one. I just don't think he's a realistic candidate at this point. Coming up after the break, we're going to get into the championship rounds of the NFC and AFC playoffs. The Detroit Lions are in the NFC Championship for the first time in my lifetime, and this is a huge moment for Detroit. But it feels like they've already got the monkey off their back. Like they have completed. They are past where they ever thought they were going to be, probably in the last 25 years. Like no one expected the Lions to make the NFC Championship. But I'm telling you, Alex. Like, and I know the Niners are like 7-point favorites here, and maybe all the money's probably going to be coming in on the Lions after the way the Niners performed against the Packers. It's hard for me not to think the Lions have a good shot here to win this game and make it to the Super Bowl.
I don't think you're alone. I think a lot of people believe that, and I think that you would be a fool not to if you're basing it on what we saw in the divisional round. The Lions looked great, and frankly, the 49ers looked like absolute garbage. But the 49ers haven't looked, you know, phenomenal the last quarter of the season, where it does feel like the Lions are kind of playing their best ball right now. And that matters in the NFL. You know, we've been talking about Bill Belichick this entire show. And one thing that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady's Patriots did so well is it didn't really matter in September and October. As long as you just kept getting better and you were playing your best ball in December and January, nothing else mattered. Time and time again, people would look at the Patriots and be like, ooh, this is the end of the dynasty. And December, they go on and win the Super Bowl. So I do think that matters. I really do. But I think that if the 49ers play up to their potential, it's a big if, they could really make this game ugly. But then again, that's a big if. Like they have not played well recently. They're susceptible in the secondary. Their secondary isn't nearly as good as it has been in past years. The front seven is still very good. Stopping the Lions' rushing attack is obviously, you know, the highest of the highest priority. That's going to be something to watch for. I do think Aaron Glenn he's got his plate full for this 49ers offense. I can't believe Joe Barry and the Packers defense, basically stopped the 49ers offense for 3.5 quarters, for pretty much the whole game, except for the final drive. So I don't really know how to see this one.
I mean, I think
Joe Barry just got fired. That's just to show you how bad that defense was.
Yeah, but I do think the rain played a big factor in that game.
It did.
That's kind of my belief, and that's kind of why I'm still leaning Niners here. I also think Detroit has a ton of issues in their secondary. I mean, I think guys could be running around wide open, and
their defense is not good. Let's just call a spade a spade.
I also think that familiarity between LaFleur and Shanahan makes for a little bit of a potential closer game. I mean, LaFleur knows exactly what Shanahan's going to do, the input he can give to that defense and stuff like that, combined with the rain, could have played a factor. I'm just trying to think of the factors, right? Because Vegas is begging you to take the Lions. I mean, they sit there and made this game 7 points. They are begging you. They're like, please take the Lions in this game.
I'm leaning 49ers. I've already got my bet in. I'm on the Niners. I got the 7 points. If it goes down to 6.5, I'm going to bet it again. I just think that, you know, everything I've seen this whole season, and I do try and follow trends as well, but this whole season is just telling me that this Lions team, you know, is good. But again, this 49ers team is great. They can win a Super Bowl. I don't think the Lions can win a Super Bowl. And like you said, when the line came out, I was a little surprised. I was a little surprised it was seven points. And that was just, like you said, the odds makers, they're begging you to take the Lions, especially after that divisional round. So ugly.
Yeah. And you got to think, I mean, you talk about experience. I know Jared Goff has experience, obviously, being here, being to a Super Bowl.
Probably
being
played in more games.
49ers. More postseason like, games. I mean, this is a team that's in the NFC Championship every single year for like, what, 4 or 5 years, it feels like. They've been to at least one Super Bowl, two. Just with Jimmy G. They went to two.
Lost two, I believe.
Anyways, regardless, they're here every single year. I am interested, though. Brock Purdy is the one guy. I know a lot of people are split on him. I am on the side of I don't know if he's got it in him to win a Super Bowl. And I'm just being serious. I mean,
I've never swayed on my opinion of Brock Purdy. It's everybody else. Everybody else is an idiot, and I'm not. He is a good quarterback. But he's not great. Like, everybody talking about him, and I'm not saying you, but, you know, there are talking heads, national media pundits who were dubbing this guy, you know, great, the next Brady. He's up there with Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. No, he's not even close. But the fact of the matter is he can operate Kyle Shanahan's system efficiently. Both things can be true. He's not good. He's not bad, but he's not great. Yeah. He's very good.
No, I mean, that's kind of where I sit. And he did show us against the Packers. I mean, you can't take away. I mean, he was asked, we talk about it all the time. At some point in the season, even the great teams are going to need a drive, whether it's in the Super Bowl, the NFC Championship, the divisional round, they're going to need you to come down and make a drive. The conditions were terrible. They've been out of sorts all game. He comes down and he delivers in the biggest moment of the 49ers season. So, listen, you can't take anything away there. I am interested to see. I would love to see the Lions make this game. I would say I am definitely going to say I am leaning 49ers here. I think that secondary, the Lions, is going to be picked apart by Brock Purdy, just by wide open receivers for the most part. I think they're going to get picked apart. Coming up after the break, we're going to get into the bigger matchup, I would say, of the two, the AFC Championship. Lamar Jackson versus Patrick Mahomes. If I was showing a random football fan that had, or not even a football fan, a random person, maybe a Swiftie before they became a Swiftie, and it's like, trust me, babe, you're going to love this. You're going to love this. This is what I would want to show him, because Lamar Jackson, whether I don't know if he's up there with like the second or third best quarterback, like I would probably put Josh Allen ahead of him. Who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. But he is the most exciting football on the field, and the second most to me is Patrick Mahomes. And in Baltimore, a crazy, raucous atmosphere. There's going to be people dressed up as birds just going nuts. It's never going to stop. I think this is the first home AFC championship in like 40 years for Baltimore. Even though they've won two Super Bowls, they did it as wild card teams, because I think Pittsburgh probably won the division. So, yeah, I mean, this is a huge moment for Baltimore. Patrick Mahomes, the underdog, he's 9-1-1 against the spread as an underdog. I mean, it's going to be spectacular. I don't care what anyone says, it's going to be spectacular.
Yeah, fireworks. I think everybody's going to be very disappointed if it's not fireworks. And I don't really know which way to lean. In the Buffalo game, I felt the exact same way as I do now, as I did between the Chiefs and Bills in the divisional round, where I was thinking everything's pointing to the Bills. The Bills had a better team than the Chiefs did. But are you really going to bet against Patrick Mahomes? I feel the exact same way. The Ravens have the better team, but are you going to bet against Patrick Mahomes? I don't know, but this is the best team the Ravens have had in the Lamar Jackson era. I mean, from coaches to players to the vibes, this is the best team. If they can't get it done now, when are you ever going to get over the Patrick Mahomes hump? I don't know. I'm very split on this one. I do want to bet the Ravens, but I'll probably end up begrudgingly betting Patrick Mahomes. I don't know how you can bet against the guy.
Yeah. I mean, I said on this show, I don't know how you can bet against this guy. And then I bet against him. And then you saw that turned out, you know, like I went with the Bills and they end up losing. I think I'm going to stick to my guns here and say the Chiefs are just not that damn good. I agree. Patrick Mahomes is that damn good, and that defense is damn good. But I still think at some point along this road, those receivers and stuff like that are going to prove too much to overcome. And if it's not the Ravens, they're winning the Super Bowl, in my opinion. Like, maybe the Niners. I mean, obviously the Niners, I would still give them a chance. But if they're up against the Lions, I think they're going to beat the Lions. So if it's not the Ravens, then who? I mean, we're talking about Patty Mahomes in, what, 6 years, has three Super Bowls and has no signs of slowing down, because this team that they have this year is not going to be as good as the one they have next year. Like, it's so it's just like, if not now, who is going to stop this man from winning a Super Bowl? Maybe Joe Burrow has to come back.
I don't know. Listen, this Kansas City defense is absolutely for real. It might be the best Chiefs defense that Patrick Mahomes has ever had. But this Chiefs offense is so pathetic. I mean, it is so bad.
Outside of Mahomes.
And yeah, Kelsey. I mean, obviously you still got Travis Kelce. Isaiah Pacheco is a dog. He runs like the Tasmanian devil. The offensive line has some guys. They've invested kind of heavily. Orlando Brown, Joe Thuney, Creed Humphrey is a guy. But I think not.
Thuney's injured, though, too. So they
He has a pulled pec, but well, come on. These offensive linemen take a couple of special vitamins and they're out there. It doesn't even matter. I'm not even fazed by that.
I'm just saying, though, this Ravens defense, aside from Lamar.
I was about to go to that. The reason why I think the Ravens is this Ravens defense, Mike McDonald, future Falcons head coach, Mike McDonald, is a special defensive mind. If anybody can stop Patrick Brown or slow him down, all you got to do is slow him down.
And nobody's playing better than Roquan Smith in the middle of that field. No. And nobody's so playing better than Roquan Smith. I mean, I can't believe the Bears let that guy go. And then they went and signed two linebackers. It's like, oh, well, we can get two of them for the price of one. It's like, bro, Roquan Smith he could play one linebacker. You'd run like a 5-1-5. Like, he's unbelievable. This Ravens defense, I think that's going to be the difference, because someone's eventually going to slow this Chiefs offense down. We've seen it time and time again throughout the regular season. And this is their biggest task that they faced all season. This is the best defense in football.
Absolutely. And a big, big piece of that Ravens offense is fully practicing. He's fully healthy. He hasn't played, for a lot of weeks. Mark Andrews, the Chiefs defense, in terms of the secondary, they're cornerbacks. They have two guys who are just absolutely studs. I don't expect the Ravens wide receivers to make a huge impact. You look out for Mark Andrews. I think that's where this Chiefs defense is vulnerable. Yeah,
but they don't need to. And Isaiah Likely is an absolute stud. I mean, yep. I know Mark Andrews is a stud, but those two tight end sets running the ball, where it's like, we got those two guys going out working the middle of the field. We can run the ball. We can run it with Lamar. It's tough to
I'm going Ravens.
And we haven't even mentioned Todd Monken. This coaching staff, I'm just so impressed with the Ravens. I couldn't see myself betting Patrick Mahomes. But if Patrick Mahomes bites me in the butt, it would not surprise me. That is what he does.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay swallowing a losing bet at the hands of Patrick Mahomes. I really am.
At the expense of, I know I'm making the right decision. I know they're the better team and they're at home. Coming up after the break, Harbaugh to the Chargers. We are going to discuss it. One of the top candidates is officially off the board, and Jim Harbaugh, as he inks a deal to become the next head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, I don't know how involved really the Falcons were. I know Mortensen came out after we did the show yesterday and said, oh, there's still heavy interest there. To me, it was a smokescreen on Harbaugh's end. He wanted to get his demands from Los Angeles. He could use Michigan and the Falcons as leverage. That's all he needed to get everything he needed in Los Angeles. I don't think there was ever a real opportunity for the Falcons to land him as their next head coach. And I believe that at the beginning of the process.
Yeah, I saw a lot of Falcons fans kind of trying to convince themselves that Atlanta's situation is better than Los Angeles's. And to a certain degree, they're right. In terms of cap health, salary cap health, the Falcons are in a better position. They have the 8th overall pick. Probably more draft picks from the Khalil Mack trade. I don't know that for sure, so don't quote me on that. In terms of resources, Arthur Blank can go toe-to-toe in terms of a pocket, deep money, with any owner in the league. The fact of the matter is a guy like Harbaugh is going to trade all of that and then some for a guy like Justin Herbert, and you would be a fool not to. It was always going to be the Chargers because of Justin Herbert. The Chargers were already going to be in a terrible place with the salary cap next year, so it doesn't matter. And getting out from underneath the cap, Falcons fans should know better than any. It only takes one season of going full bore. We're going to, you know, get rid of everybody and rebuild, go down to the studs. So it only takes one real season. And when you got a guy like Justin Herbert, he could cover up a lot of deficiencies. So I think it was always the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh did want personnel decision-making power, or at least a big say. That's what, you know, drove him out of San Francisco when he coached the 49ers all those years ago. And that's not to say he couldn't have it with Atlanta and the Falcons. Honestly, in our ideal scenario, it was Jim Harbaugh and Rich McKay out working one-on-one with Terry Fontenot. The fact of the matter is there was one factor in all of this. It was Justin Herbert. It was never going to be Atlanta. And I think he was just using that as leverage, like you said.
As long as you have Justin Herbert, you're going to be competitive. I don't care if they absolutely dust up the roster and rip it down to shreds and go full bore, like you said, and to, you know, just dump everything that they possibly can, whether it's trades, take it on the chin for 1 year. Even if they do all of that with Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert, they're still going to be competing for a playoff spot. I mean, you talk about Jim Harbaugh, and we talked about his offensive pedigree and some of the quarterbacks he has coached and led to Super Bowls, Colin Kaepernick, NFC Championships, Alex Smith, National Championships, J.J. McCarthy. Now he has Justin Herbert. Like, to put him ahead of those guys, like, there's levels to this. He's like seven levels above anything Jim Harbaugh has ever had. Jim Harbaugh knows how to adjust to his personnel. He's going to strengthen those offensive and defensive lines. He's a hard-nosed coach. He was the top candidate for the Falcons for a reason among fans and I think probably even among Arthur Blank. The reality of the situation, as we said, it just was never going to happen.
He did have Andrew Luck at Stanford, so that is, you know, take that for what you will. But yeah, in terms of the NFL, I mean, just it would be an insult to put Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick in the same conversation as Justin Herbert. What's crazy is Justin Herbert hasn't even realized his full potential. He's really, you know, he really hasn't under Brandon Staley, who has just completely botched the beginning years of Justin Herbert's career. I know Kellen Moore did a lot for him this past year, but, you know, Kellen Moore is not going to be a head coach for a reason, and Jim Harbaugh is. You know, the fact of the matter is Jim Harbaugh is kind of like a quarterback whisperer of sorts. You've said that before. And what he's going to do for Justin Herbert is going to put Justin Herbert in the conversations with the elite of the elite consistently. That is the problem with Justin Herbert, is he has been mentioned with the Josh Allens, the Lamar Jacksons, the Joe Burrows. The fact is he hasn't done it consistently enough to kind of, you know, have a real footing in that conversation. That's all going to change. And it's why the Falcons never really had an opportunity. If the Falcons held the number one, two, or three overall pick, I think we'd have a much different conversation. But the fact of the matter is we're not going to get a top quarterback in this class. And J.J. McCarthy would be a total reach at the eighth overall pick.
Yeah, one side note to this, and I don't want to talk too much about it, but I don't know if you saw this, but Florio on Pro Football Talk, I don't know how this even gets brought up, dude. He goes, Colin Kaepernick has been out of the league since 10 years, but now with Jim Harbaugh coming back, will Colin Kaepernick be back? And then it's like,
give it a rest.
On his staff. It's like, what? Colin Kaepernick's a coach now? What do we
give
do?
It
like,
a rest.
Florio, like, there's like, I know he just does this half times to drum up views and stuff like that, but this is just, that's just like one of the most absurd things I've ever heard. Like, if that happens, I'll prove to be a total idiot, but I just don't even understand how that's the first thing that you thought of. How are you even thinking about that?
Listen, let's not beat around the bush that Colin Kaepernick did get screwed initially. When he was initially blackballed, it was absolutely screwed. But the past 2 years or so, 3 years, that people keep drumming up these, the guy hasn't played football. And we're closer to a decade of him not playing football.
Literally a decade. Literally, we're quite literally 8-9 years away from him last playing football.
It's time to give it a rest.
And I've never once heard Colin Kaepernick asking to be a coach in the NFL. So I just don't even know where the hell this came from. But
it's just sad sometimes. Like, it's in the same breath as Cam Newton when people are like, Cam Newton? It's like, he wasn't good when he was playing, and that was 4 years ago.
I'll say though, Cam Newton, something about him that's really come out in his whole like media tour that he's doing. He's become a much more very likable dude. I don't know if
sure, but the idea of him coming and playing in the NFL again is hilarious. I'm not even
talking about that. Yeah, screw that. I'm just talking about he's become a very likable character. He's awesome. I think he was dead on
with his game managers and game changers thing.
I think a lot of he's misunderstood and taken out of context a lot with clips. And if you listen long enough to him, he's really articulate, really smart. I really like Cam Newton. Coming up after the break, Baker Mayfield to the Falcons could be a possibility. The Bake Show is coming to Atlanta. All right, maybe a little too far, but Baker Mayfield to the Falcons. He is a free agent. He did have a fantastic end of the season. He really had a very good season. I would say top 15 quarterback season. And like if he builds off that, we could be talking about a top 10 quarterback. I mean, we just talked about Cam Newton, the game manager thing, game changer. I mean, I think he falls under that Dak Prescott, that kind of Brock Purdy, that kind of caliber of quarterback in the right system. I think he could continue being a very good quarterback.
I'm blanking on the Buccaneers offensive coordinator's name, but he has done wonders across the league. He was a guy last year in Seattle that helped Geno Smith kind of revive his career. He did it with Baker. He's a head coaching candidate. Carolina really likes him. Hopefully he doesn't go there. But the fact of the matter is Baker Mayfield was a top 10 quarterback. If you want to put it into metrics, he was top 10 in yards, top 10 in completion percentage, and top 10 in touchdowns, setting career marks in each one of those. Baker Mayfield absolutely deserves to get paid. And we're bringing this all about because Albert Breer, NFL insider, I think it's Sports Illustrated, basically was talking to Rich Eisen. And, you know, he still feels that Bill Belichick, at least he did yesterday or 2 days ago, is the favorite for the Falcons head coaching vacancy. And then Eisen pivoted. So let's just assume it's Belichick. Where does he go with a quarterback as Matt Ryan, as most people kind of assume it's going to be a veteran route? A lot of people, an AFC executive predicted, if you haven't seen that article, go check it out on the site, sportstalkatl.com. An AFC executive, you know, basically predicted it's going to be Kirk Cousins and Bill Belichick in Atlanta. Matches up with what Cousins said, that he would basically relish the idea of playing for Belichick, a first ballot Hall of Famer, many consider to be the greatest of all time. But if that falls through, he is with the Vikings. There is some speculation that he'll probably return there. If he does, I think that Atlanta's sights should pivot to Baker Mayfield, and Albert Breer agrees. He brought up a story. He cut his teeth in New England as a beat reporter. Basically, he said during that 2018 NFL draft, the Belichick and his staff was enamored with Baker Mayfield. So he liked him then. He's got to like him now after what he just saw in 2023. I think the idea of adding Baker Mayfield really isn't a consolation prize to Kirk Cousins. He's by far and away. Kirk Cousins has separated himself from the free agent class, but Baker Mayfield is far and away better than Russell Wilson or Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, there's also a report that Bill Belichick tried to trade for Baker and get rid of Mac Jones, which, you know, we talked about Tom Brady and those decisions not always being good, but that would have been a good one in my opinion. I mean, Baker Mayfield is a good quarterback, and it looks like he's a guy that's finding his confidence and finding his footing in this league, and we've seen what that can do with Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield. There's no reason to believe that this cannot continue, especially in a good situation with a good offensive line, good weapons, in Atlanta, new coach. Maybe you get an offense. Well, obviously, we're talking about Belichick in this scenario. But if
Josh
it wasn't
McDaniels would work.
Yeah, Josh McDaniels. I'm just saying, like, I don't even know if Baker Mayfield's a consolation prize to Kirk Cousins. Because, I mean, you're talking about Kirk Cousins, who's going to be 36 next year. He's coming off a torn Achilles. Like, yes, he was playing his best football. But the cliff that these quarterbacks fall off is often very steep. It's often very steep. And he's coming off a series
injury. Right.
I would even argue that if possible, I would rather have Baker Mayfield because younger, more upside, not coming off a significant injury over Kirk Cousins.
There's a wrinkle in this that has to be addressed in this scenario, hypothetical scenario. Is Belichick has got to give blank like, hey, I'll be here at least 3 years. And if we could somehow match up that contract length with Baker Mayfield's contract length, something like Geno Smith signed, which was 3 for $75, but it could work its way up to $105, $35 million a year incentive laced, that would be a dream. That would be an absolute dream. It really would.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Baker, and honestly,
if just, we have Bill Belichick, I don't want the guy though. I got to put
talk that about the fun side of things though. Baker's yeah. fun. Baker's
you're right.
fun,
and that the Bake Show in Atlanta would do that. Would do numbers.
Yeah, we might have people in the stadium. I mean, crazy, crazy to think. That's what we're. That, this is how it's supposed to look. I think Arthur Blank, when fans arrived at Mercedes-Benz for the first time, whenever that happens, will be like, wow. This is what it looks like full. Now I will say he's seen college football playoffs and even Atlanta United games. I mean,
the dome. He saw the dome.
The Falcons are down bad. That wraps up our show for this evening. Thank you guys for joining us. We will be back with you on Friday.